in the davening, we often refer to Sukkas Shlomach, or refer to the Sukkah of Peace. It's a common refrain again and again. Thank you so much. It's a common refrain again and again, over and over again. The Sukkah of Peace, the Sukkah of Peace. So I want to explore for the next few minutes is, what does that mean, the Sukkah of Peace? What are we davening for? And what does a Sukkah have to do with peace? And what are we supposed to walk away? We certainly live in a time of a lot of unrest, and a lot of people, whether it's on a communal level, or on a national level, or an international level, are not getting along so much. Whether it's, you know, countries fighting, whether it's politicians fighting, as we saw last night, or whether it is, you know, communities fighting. Yes, masks, no masks, I will stay with this person, I won't stay with this person. All different types of politics at the end of the day. And how can we come to a place of having a Sukkas Shalom, that we can have a Sukkah of peace, that this coming Sukkas we can appreciate what it means to be B'Shalom, and have a real sense of tranquility, and really make the Sukkah something very special. You know, Yaakov is done fighting Esav, is done meeting with Esav, and they make their decisions, whatever, they end in peace, and he goes to Sukkos, he goes to a place of Sukkah. So we see already in the Torah, there's some sort of connection between the Sukkah and a place of peace as well. The Tur writes in Siman Tav Yud Zayin, the Tur is writing about how the Shalosh Hagalim correspond to the Avos. Yaakov represents Sukkah, and Avram represents Pesach, and Yitzhak represents Shavuos. They have all types of readings, explanations for each one. But that's all separate. Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov all divided up. The only holiday where everybody comes together in the Sukkah, it comes together in the Sukkah by the Ushpizin, right? By the Ushpizin, all the seven come together. They all sit together. The Sukkah represents having a sense of Shalom, having a sense of peace together as well. Rav Aaron of Karlin asks, how come the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, the great celebrations that we have, only start on the second night of Sukkot? Only after the second. How come we don't have Simchas Beis HaShoeva on the first night? So Rav Aaron of Karlin says, because there's no rejoicing when Avram comes by himself. It's not a party when Avram's there by himself. It's only on the second night when Avram comes with the Yitzchak, and then Yitzchak comes along with the Yaakov on the third night. When there are people there and you share together, that's when there's Simcha. There's no rejoicing to sit in a Sukkah by yourself. The Simcha comes when there's an Avram and a Yitzchak and then a Yaakov and an Aaron, Yosef, David, and everybody together at the end of the day. So let's discuss and let's get to the idea of a Sukkah Shalom. Now, one of the descriptions, this is a perfect example right now. We're sitting here by a Diras Arai. It's a temporary dwelling. You know, that's the main halacha of a Sukkah. It has to be temporary. It can't be too strong, or else it's not a kosher Sukkah. So that's strange, because if we want the Sukkah to be a place of peace, then why do we also say that the Sukkah is temporary? Don't we want our Shalom, don't we want our Sukkah Shlomecha to be strong? We don't want it to be flimsy and blow over in the wind. So I want to bring two different suggestions from two very different great people. The first is from Rav Kook. This is brought in the Moadei HaRa'ayah, which is a collection of Rav Kook's writings and thoughts from his student Rav Neiria. So Rav Kook makes the following point. He says that a sukkah is arai, it's temporary. And sukkah has all types of leniencies, right? That the walls don't have to connect all the way, you only need three walls, not four. It can be missing a space over here, we can count this over here. Sukkahs have all types of leniencies, and it's not so strong at the end of the day. And the same is true regarding peace. There's a type of shalom, and this is the first type of shalom we're going to talk about. There's a type of shalom, there's a type of peace in the world where it's not perfect. It's not the way you want it. It's not ideal. Whether it can be between siblings who are not getting along, but there's kind of like a shared understanding that we're going to make it work. Parents and siblings, it's not ideal, but you know, it's flimsy, but it works. Neighbors, whatever it may be. That is a type of shalom, says Rav Kook. Not every shalom needs to be perfect. Needs to be everybody's loving and singing, getting along. There's a type of shalom in life. There's a type of peace which is good, and it's valid, and it's not considered like, ugh, like this is all that I have. There's a type of shalom where that's okay, it's flimsy, it's like a sukkah. And that's a Sukkas Shlomecha. That's a Sukkah of peace that's flimsy, like a Diras Arai that's temporary, but it's still a Shalom at the end of the day. And we're going to explore that in a moment. The other is an idea I heard in the name of Rabbi Emanuel Jacobitz. Rabbi Emanuel Jacobitz was the chief rabbi of England. We've all heard of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, because he was super famous. But before he became a superstar, so the chief rabbi before him, in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, in England was Rabbi Emanuel Jacobowitz. And Rabbi Jacobowitz said that we know that if the walls of the sukkah sway too much, they're no good. Right? We know that if we have these, sometimes that the canvas sukkah walls move more than 3 tefachim back and forth, the sukkah is not valid. The Chafetz Chaim is machmer, they can't move at all. And even if there's no wind blowing, there's a machlokes between the Chafetz Chaim and the Chazon Ish as to whether is the wall still good. Like, let's say we had flimsy walls over here, but it was protected on all sides by trees, so the wind couldn't get through. So even if there was a wind, it might move it, but right now there's no wind, and now it's setting still. And there the Chafetz Chaim as well, and the Chazon Ish argue, is that a good sukkah, is that not a good sukkah? But what's the point? That if the walls are too flimsy, they're not even considered walls. They're nothing. So says Rabbi Jacobowitz, we want sukkas shlomecha. We don't just want a sukkah. A regular sukkah, he says, is arai. That's temporary. It's too flimsy, it moves around. But we want sukkas shlomecha. We want a real sukkah that's strong enough even when there we sit in the sukkah and we should feel safe. We don't want a shalom where we only feel safe in a room or in a miklat if there's a bombing, chas v'shalom. We want a peace where we can walk the streets without a fear of terrorism or anything like that. And that, he says, what we're davening. We're davening for not just sukkah, but sukkas shlomecha. The perfect peace. The perfect peace where everybody really gets along, and it's not just being nice for the sake of getting along. Both models that we just spoke about, the temporary peace, the temporary shalom, and the real peace, the real strong peace, are important and have roles. Personally, as we said before, we want to be best friends with everybody, but some relationships are just difficult. It's not so easy just to, everybody gets along and sits around a table and has a great time. That's not so easy. There are people in our lives who make things stressful sometimes, but nevertheless, it's important not to push them away. It's important to have that diras arai, that temporary type of shalom, that's also shalom. It's still good, and it should be valued. Just because things are rocky with a relationship in your life doesn't mean, everything is bad, and let's just get away because I can't handle this person. Find common ground. Find a place of shalom where you can still work with them, and don't push it away, because that is still a good sukkah. And let's not get rid of that. And it continues as well to the real type of sukkah. But don't let that sukkah stay by itself. Let's try to nudge that piece along. Let's get to Rabbi Jacobowitz's piece, a real strong piece, a real shalom, where there's a strong bond, where you stand up for one another, where you can stand strong winds of difficulty. We want to develop that sukkah to the next level. But right now, if it's not there, that shalom is also good. It works as well nationally, right? We thank Hashem when Achenu Beis Yisrael can walk the streets in, America, and we can be safe somewhat, and things are okay, and it's not perfect, and nowhere in the world is perfect for Jews to be, but that's a sukkah shalom, says Rav Kook. That's a good piece. That's okay for now, even though it's not perfect. But we wait for the perfect sukkah of Rabbi Jacobowitz, the sukkah shlomecha, in which we feel safe, and we have a Beis HaMikdash, and we're in Yerushalayim, and we're celebrating sukkahs as it should be in the proper way. That's what we long for at the end of the day. And both types of sukkahs are necessary, and we need to make shalom wherever we can, and we need not always fight, and we have to appreciate the relationships. We want to be better, may not be ready right now, but we're going to work on those relationships to have that temporary shalom now, and to make that shalom better later on at the end of the day. At the same time, we should always be striving for that higher level of sukkah shalom, and it doesn't need to have any second thoughts if maybe our relationships are not perfect as we want them to be. So those are the two types of shalom. Let's move on to another aspect of the sukkah. I heard this once on a tape from Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, who was a great, great speaker who lived in England, who unfortunately passed away at a young age, relatively young age, and he was a great, great teacher of Torah. So Rabbi Bernstein made a brilliant insight. Listen to this. One of the famous rules about building the sukkah is it has to be ta'asa v'lo mina asoy. You have to place the schach on the sukkah. So good. This is a perfect example. It's like we knew we were going to need this. If I put the schach on the sukkah tonight, if I put the schach on the sukkah tonight, and then I went and I built walls around it tomorrow, would that be good? No, that would not be good. Because the schach needs to be actively placed on kosher walls. I have to put up the walls first, and then I have to put up the schach. Another example the Mishnah talks about is, let's say I have a giant haystack, a giant, huge haystack, and I need a sukkah for sukkahs, and I don't want to pay, $9,000 for one of those sukkahs they sell in Mishpacha. I won't give anybody free press, but, one of those fancy sukkahs. So I don't want to pay for that, but I have a haystack. So I go into the haystack, and I start, hollowing it out, like I'm a kid playing in the sand or playing in snow, and... not that we're going to have snow days anymore, but who knows. But I'm hollowing out the haystack, and I have a little place I can sit. It's tall enough. It has all the measurements. There's a little bit of space on top where the sun and the stars can be seen through, and I made a sukkah out of this haystack. So the Mishnah says that sukkah is not kosher. Why? Because I did not actively place the schach on top. The Torah says, sukkos ta'ase. You have to make a sukkah. That means you have to put the schach on the sukkah. Velomina asui. It can't happen by itself. It can't happen passively. So Rabbi Bernstein says that the sukkah shalom is the shalom that we have to make. Peace is not going to happen by itself. That sukkah of peace is not going to happen by us sitting around doing nothing. You want a sukkah of peace in your life, you got to build that sukkah. You got to put that sukkah on top yourself. You can't wait for that peace to come around and somebody else is going to solve your problems or fix your relationships and make that difficult relationship in your life better. You need to build that sukkah of peace yourself. Ta'asa, you build that sukkah. You put the schach on that sukkah of peace. And don't wait for somebody else to come around and fix that peace for you. No one else is going to solve your relationships in life besides you. You're going to have to build that sukkah of peace if you want it to last. And that's what it means. We have to learn now, if there are two types of sukkahs of peace, how are we going to build that sukkah? How am I going to build that sukkah shlomecha that I can have a happy and a vibrant life? So let's begin with a few pieces. Rav Dessler has a piece of the Miftah of Maliyahu in Volume 2, and he says that if we recognize that this world is temporary, like the sukkah, and that chasing after pleasures and silly things is a waste of our time and will lead to emptiness and frustration, then we can achieve peace. Because shalom, real peace, only comes if you strive for ruchnis, if you strive for spiritual things. If you're constantly pursuing physical things and physical pleasures and physical realities, you're never going to build that sukkah. Sukkah means that we recognize that the physical things of this world are temporary. If you're constantly pursuing something physically nice and money and power and things like that, and you're not focusing on spiritual pursuits, you're never going to build that sukkah. And that's point number one. There are so many fights in life because I want, I need. Siblings not talking because this one got this and this one didn't get this one. And how come mom and dad gave you this car, but they didn't give this to me? And partners fighting over who's going to have this much and who's going to have that much and who's going to be in charge of the business. And just friends getting involved in such silly things because they lose focus of what the ultimate goal is, to have that sukkah of peace. To realize that this world is temporary like the sukkah, and the only thing that matters at the end of the day is your relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And every decision you make, is that going to further that relationship with Hashem? Or is that going to dissonate that relationship with Hashem? If I pursue this fight, is that going to make me closer to Hashem? Or is that going to make me further away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the end of the day? And if we live in a world where people are only striving for physical and permanent things, then I won't be able to live in peace. Because I want that and you want that, and this person wants the same thing. And it's never going to turn out good for anybody at the end of the day. There's a story told about Harry Fishel, the famous Jewish philanthropist who lived in the beginning of the 20th century. Harry Fishel once came to Radin to visit and to meet with the Chavetz Chaim and to write a big check for his yeshiva to help him out. Harry Fishel was an incredibly wealthy person beyond, we could possibly imagine. The old Beis Medrash in YU is named as the Harry Fishel Beis Medrash, paid for by him. So Harry Fishel came to the house of the Chavetz Chaim, and the house of the Chavetz Chaim, it was probably not much bigger than this patio, and it was one room, a bed, a chair, a few things, but there was no furniture. There was no furniture. There was a table, a chair, and a bed, and that was the whole thing. So Harry Fishel looks at Chavetz Chaim and says, "No, excuse me, Rebbe, but where's your stuff? Like, what's going on over here?" Harry Fishel never saw anything like this. He lived on a fancy, parkhouse, penthouse, and he was a very well-to-do man. So he looked at the Chavetz Chaim and says, "What happened to your couch? Lazy boy, something, what's going on?" So the Chavetz Chaim said, "I don't understand the question." So he said to Harry Fishel, "Where's your stuff? Where's your couch? Where's your table?" So Harry Fishel looked at him like he thought the Chofetz Chaim was going out of his mind. So he said, Rebbe, I apologize, but I'm traveling. I don't bring my stuff with me when I'm traveling. So the Chofetz Chaim looked at him and said, I'm also traveling. I'm traveling through this world to get to somewhere else that's more important. I don't need anything else. Those things aren't important to me. I'm traveling. I have what I need. What's important for me is to be there, and I'm traveling through here to get to the end of the day. If we had that perspective, a lot of things would be different in life. But at least if we had a little bit of that perspective, it would solve so much pain and suffering, because we're just traveling here to build a sukkah of peace at the end of the day. And life is not about having stuff. Let's move on to another piece regarding how to build that sukkah of shalom. The Arnei HaKavod, which we commemorate on Sukkot, the machlokas are the sukkah representing an actual booth or the clouds of glory in the tent, in the desert. So those were given to Bnei Yisrael in the Zuchus of who? Who? Moshe gives us the man, Miriam gives us the well of water, and who gives us who gives us the clouds of glory? Aaron. Very good, birthday girl. So Aaron gives us the clouds of glory. It makes sense, right? What is Aaron? Aaron is the Rodei Shalom. Aaron is the one who pursues peace. Does it not make sense that the sukkah should teach us about peace at the end of the day? Ohev Shalom, Rodei Shalom. So Rav Pinkus has a beautiful piece about what does it mean to be Rodei Shalom. What does that mean? I know what it means to love peace. That I get. What does it mean to run after peace? So he brings a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant example. And he says that for many people, peace is very boring. It's not very exciting. Everybody gets along, everybody's happy. It's not a lot of fun. When things are going well, we see that some people disappear and they get very quiet. Sometimes in a community, a shul, in a family, people are very quiet. And when things start to heat up and there's a little bit of machlokas, they just like come out of nowhere. Where did that guy come from? All of a sudden he shows up and he's ready to get involved when there's some disagreement going on. And when the strife and the fighting, these people come out of the woodwork ready to see what's going on. And for some people, machlokas is only as geschmack as watching machlokas. It's delicious to watch and to pursue machlokas. It just gives them a lot of excitement. So he gives up. Listen to this mashal. Listen to this beautiful mashal. Because we've all seen it. I see it with my kids, right? You see a fire truck or an ambulance going down the street. What does every single kid say? What does every single kid say? Wow! Lights, action, and they start making the noises, they're excited, a fire truck, an ambulance, that is so cool. But when you grow up and you're a little bit more mature, what do you realize that an ambulance and a fire truck means? It means that something bad is happening. Oh, but the lights and it's exciting and it draws your attention and it's cool and it's making the noises. That's great if you're between the age of, you know, maybe like 5 and 10. But at a certain point, we come to recognize that all of the lights and all the action, all the excitements and all the fireworks means that something really bad is going on and people are suffering. And says Rav Pinkus, it's the same thing with machlokas. We get a geschmack WhatsApp, something on social media, and do you see that letter they wrote about this? And they responded back to them, and you won't believe what this person said back to them. And you sit on the, are you involved in machlokas? No, definitely not. You are an Isha Shalom. You are a person of peace. You love peace. Why would I ever do that? But you sit there and you're reading, oh my gosh, I can't believe he said this. Oh my gosh, I can't believe he said that. And he's saying this and this and this. Are you a Rodei Shalom? Are you a pursuer of peace while you sit on the side and you watch the ambulance and the fire truck drive by, not realizing that somebody's dying inside with every single time that's forwarded again? And every single time somebody makes another comment? A Rodei Shalom is burning inside when that's happening. A Rodei Shalom is dying inside when he sees those fireworks and those sirens of that ambulance, because he knows that somebody else is hurting. And that's what it means to be a Rodei Shalom. You may be Ohev Shalom. It's nice when things are peaceful. But when the fireworks and the ambulance and the fire truck are running by, are you running after to see what those lights look like? And that text and that WhatsApp and that social media post comes in, do you throw that away and not look at it? Or do you read to the end to see how amazing and geschmack that was? So that's what it means to be a Rodei Shalom at the end of the day. And we also sometimes enjoy watching the fighting from up close or from afar. We like the lights and the sirens, but we forget there are people behind the fighting as well. We have to be so careful to be Rodei Shalom and to avoid going to look at the train wreck that's at the end of the street. Let's turn on to another aspect of shalom, and that is the shalom over being correct. There's a beautiful piece in the Tzemach Tzedek, the I forgot which number of the Lubavitcher Rebbe's. So the Tzemach Tzedek has a piece in the Or HaTorah in Parshas Emor, and he writes something gorgeous. He says, "Children don't keep grudges." You ever notice that? You upset a child, they don't keep grudges. He says, "Dihinei anu roim shatinokos yichasu ze al ze." Children get upset all the time. Umiyad kerega yashlimu. Within a moment, yashlimu, they make shalom. V'ahava v'achla b'neim. And there's peace and love between them. Kilu lo hayim olam shum pirat, as if nothing happens at all. Klal. It's funny, right? You tell a child that don't touch that, don't go there, you're punished. And the kid starts screaming and crying, "I hate you, you're the worst mommy, daddy in the whole world, I don't want to see you ever again, da 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 da." And then what happens? 2 minutes later, you get the kid an ice cream, and now you're best friends. Can you imagine that happening with an adult? Can you imagine that happening? You insult your friend, "Oh, but I got you ice cream." That wouldn't happen. But a child, it works. Every single child, top. They hate you, they called us the worst names in the world, and 3 minutes later, you're best friends and everything turns away. But he says, adults are different. Adults, if I don't invite you to my grandson's bar mitzvah, you will not talk to me ever again. Ever again. Done. We're over. I can't. You stab me in the back. You are the worst. I hope the worst thing's upon you. Why is it? What is wrong with us? What is the difference between an adult and a child? A child can get over it very, very quickly, but an adult can hold on to grudges for an endless amount of time. What is wrong with us? So he says as follows. He explains that if it's true, adults are more mature than children, and children are less mature. But children make a very key decision that we don't do. Children, for them, it's more important to be happy than to be right. And for adults, it's more important to be right than to be happy. That is the mistake that we make. Let me show you exactly what he says. He says, "Lefisha tinokos in hanefesh hasichlis," because their neshama is not totally intellectual yet. Shubechinas adam misgale behem adayin kol kach rak b'chay nefesh hachiyunis shehu me'ein bechinas nefesh habahamis. It's less developed. Einam yesh. They don't have an ego, children. For them, they're more interested in being happy and being peaceful and having a great life. We are more interested in being right and not saying sorry. Because if I say sorry to that person, then da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and everything, who cares? Say sorry at the end of the day. Make them happy. What is such a big deal? Say sorry and move on and make things better. But there's something wrong with our brains when we get older, and we need to be right. We need to be correct, and it's a principle, and just because I said so, and I cannot bear the fact that someone would think that I, who cares? Say sorry, make peace, and move on. Children are infinitely better at that than we are. And that's something we need to look to as well at the end of the day. Right? A person goes on vacation and it rains, but you had great food and the temperature was amazing and you stayed in a nice hotel. So you come back and what happened? Oh, it rained the whole time. That's it? That's it? It rained the whole time? Nothing else? A child goes on vacation and there was a water slide and we got to eat out and the bed was so bouncy I could jump on it. Whatever it is, we need to start thinking like that. It's more important to have shalom and to be happy than to be right at the end of the day. Just look at a young child. Children don't need to learn strategies to have positive living. They don't need to read Stephen Covey books or, you know, self-help books about how to be live your best life. They don't need to do that because children are naturally positive. They want to be happy. They seek to be happy at the end of the day, right? Children need a reason to be sad. Right? Nobody asks a child, "Why are you so happy about?" Nobody. You ask a child, "What's wrong? Why are you crying? Is everything okay at the end of the day?" A child is happy by default. And if they aren't happy, there must be a reason why something is wrong for them. They're hungry, they're thirsty, they need attention, they have a dirty diaper, whatever it is. They're naturally happy. That's the way they want to be. But something along the line changes. We grow older, we become more demanding, harder to please, and we lose the childish contentment, and we become jaded by disappointments, and we become negative, and we feel that we need a reason to be happy, right? If you see a fully grown adult and they're smiling for no reason, what do you ask them? "Are you okay? Is there something wrong with you? Why are you smiling?" Instead, if you see a fully grown adult with a sad face, you're like, "Oh, whatever. I don't know, life, whatever. That's just the way things are. That's wrong. That's backwards. We should walk around B'Shalom. We should walk around peaceful. We should walk around happy. We need to learn from children how to be much better about this at the end of the day. Shalom doesn't mean that everybody does the same thing. And this is a mistake that we often make. Shalom doesn't mean that I agree with all of your political opinions and you agree with all of my political opinions and I agree what the best restaurant is and you agree what the best restaurant is and that's it. That's not shalom. That's we all took out our brains of our head and we put them on the side and we stopped thinking and being human beings and having free choice. Shalom means that I think you're wrong about that opinion, and I think you're dead wrong about that opinion, and that is the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life. But you know what? I still love you, and I still think you're great, and we can have common ground and discuss things as well. Shalom doesn't mean that we all agree about everything, but it does mean that I'm more interested in being happy and getting along than I am about being right and proving you wrong at the end of the day. And we need to be less self-conscious. Children are free to be happy because they're not yet aware of themselves. And it's only when we mature and we become self-aware, we become more self-absorbed. Worries, concerns, unfulfilled dreams, things that go wrong. And none of us can honestly say that we have it all. And we can always find a reason to be upset. That's easy. What we need to be better about is like a child to not be bothered by what you're missing, that you don't have it all. And that lack of self-consciousness of wanting to pursue happiness is much better at the end of the day. So I want to tell one story. What it means to have a sukkah of peace, and then we'll wrap it up together. Rav Shlomo Carlbach tells the following story, that after the Holocaust, in one of the DP camps, in the displaced person camps, there was a group of Karliner Hasidim who decided before the upcoming sukkahs, they wanted to build a sukkah. And they spent days and days and days gathering pieces of wood, branches, makeshift decorations to put together what by all means, externally, was not a very pretty sukkah, but on the inside was the most beautiful sukkah in the entire world. And the whole time, for those days leading up to sukkahs, as they were building that sukkah, there was another gentleman, a Jewish fellow who was also in the DP camp, who, due to the worst events in the history of mankind, had lost his faith in Judaism, Torah, Mitzvos, and he would scream at them and bother them and say, what are you wasting your time for building your silly booth? This is ridiculous. Stop, 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 and give them the hardest time in the world. And this continued through the building of the sukkah into the night of sukkah itself. And on the first night of sukkahs, the Karliner Hasidim come together in their most amazing sukkah, in this most terrible of places, and they're singing and they're dancing and they're rejoicing together. And the guy comes over and he starts screaming and berating them, silly people, backwards customs, what's wrong with you, screaming and yelling. And the day they ignore him, and they go on to the second day. And the second day he comes over again, screaming and yelling, giving them the worst things they could ever imagine, and just making it miserable for them to listen to this while they're trying to sit in a sukkah, their sukkah of peace. Finally, one of the young Hasidim can't take it anymore. And he walks out of the sukkah, and he gets in the face of this guy, and he says, what is your problem? Leave us alone. We're eating in a sukkah. What is the big deal? What is the problem? You don't like sukkahs? Fine. But leave us alone. Nobody told you to come. And the guy who's yelling at them gets red in the face. And he puts his finger back in the chassid's face and he says, I'm most upset that you didn't invite me to your sukkah. And that's why I'm yelling and screaming. How can you put in all this effort and you didn't invite me to your sukkah? And that's what it means to have sukkah shlamecha. To not get lost in the building and the sitting of the sukkah. And obviously this year it was much more difficult to have the type of gatherings that we want at the end of the day. And to sit in that sukkah as described in the story. But that's what it means. To make people happy, to focus on making people happy, making yourself happy, and to open up the sukkah at the end of the day. Ta'asa b'lo mina asui. The only way you're going to make that sukkah of peace is if you open that sukkah yourself. You build that sukkah yourself. You scaffold from the sukkah that's the piece of sukkah that's not so perfect to the better type of peace later on. You build and you build, piece by piece. We start with a little bit of shalom and more shalom. A little bit of shalom and more shalom. Building both types of sukkahs, the sukkah of Rav Kook, that is arai, that is temporary, and the sukkah of Rabbi Jacobowitz, that is strong, can withstand any winds at the end of the day. We have to teach ourselves, our families, to actively build sukkos shalom, and we should preserve and cherish the temporary sukkah as we achieve, but at the same time work towards a time when the sukkah shalom is strong because there's no machlokas threatening the sukkah that we're sitting in. And when you're conscious about the temporary nature of this world, and you are conscious about what it means to build your sukkah and to be happy and to not be right all the time, you can build the most incredible and wonderful sukkah to sit in with everybody you love. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much, everyone.
Yeah. Can I offer you a piece of cake?